the verse that we have been assigned, continuing from before the ILS started, is 5th Canto, Chapter 13. Rahugana converses with Jadbharat. Text 16. Prasajati kvapi lata bhujasrayas tarasraya vyakta paradvija spriha quad chit kara chit dhari chakra tastrasan sakyam vidate baka kanka gridhrai. Translation. Sometimes the living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers. Being afraid of roaring lions in the forest, he makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Purport. In the forest of the material world, there are many animals and birds, trees and creepers. Sometimes the living entity wants to take shelter of the creepers. In other words, he wants to be happy by being embraced by the creeper-like arms of his wife. Within the creepers, there are many chirping birds. This indicates that he wants to satisfy himself by hearing the sweet voice of his wife. In old age, however, he sometimes becomes afraid of imminent death, which is compared to a roaring lion. To save himself from the lion's attack, he takes shelter of some bogus swamis, yogis, incarnations, pretenders, and cheaters. Being misled by the illusory energy in this way, he spoils his life. It is said, Harim vinam ritim na taranti. No one can be saved from the imminent danger of death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Hari indicates the lion as well as the Supreme Lord. To be saved from the hands of Hari, the lion of death, one must take shelter of the Supreme Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People with a poor fund of knowledge take shelter of non-devotee cheaters and pretenders in order to be saved from the clutches of death. In the forest of the material world, the living entity first of all wants to be very happy by taking shelter of the creeper-like arms of his wife and hearing her sweet voice. Later, he sometimes takes shelter of so-called gurus and sadhus who are like cranes, herons, and vultures. Thus, he is cheated both ways by not taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Om Gana Chimarandasya, Gananjana Shalakaya, Chakshun Militangena, Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha, Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasadi Gaurabhaktavrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You are in the midst of Jadbharat's instruction to Rahugana Maharaj. You know that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajasayovadu. This knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is meant for the rulers of society, and it's passed down from one saintly ruler to another. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Bhagavad Gita knowledge is meant for the government heads, because otherwise, how can they give people protection? Protection from what? Especially protection from lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. That is the number one responsibility of the government. Rahugana Maharaj has been humbled. A few chapters ago, he thought that this personality, Jadbharat, was an imbecile, suitable for carrying his palanquin. A few chastising, ironic words from Jadbharat and Rahugana Maharaj immediately understood, I'm in the presence of an extraordinary person. And he begged for shelter, and that begging for shelter means begging for instruction. In the course of Judd Bart's instructing Rahugana Maharaj, he's going to give him an extended allegory, the forest of material enjoyment. And that allegory takes several chapters because Rahugana Maharaj wants clarification upon clarification. He wants to really get it. So in the preceding chapter, Judd Bart has introduced this wonderful allegory, describing material existence as a forest of illusion. And Rahugana Maharaj is pressing him for more clarification. He wants to make sure that the case is nailed shut. He's got it in his head and in his heart. He sees, the king sees, yes, there's a forest of illusion, but now I'd like to understand clearly the path through that forest, and also I want not only vision, but I want the dynamics, the motivation to make it through that forest. So based on Rahugana Maharaj's headfelt and heartfelt investment, Judd Bart is responding. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in that way. The outlay of the forest has already been given. Now, Judd Bart is going to be even more merciful. After doing the environmental scan, check out where you're residing, check out what's happening around you. Now, how are you going to make your way through? I'll tell you the path. I'll give you the vision, and I'll impart to you the enthusiasm to progress on that path. So this is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yet, we may think this chapter, if you read it with submission, the preceding chapter and the one that's coming, you may think, this is very relentless. There's nothing is in material existence is left untouched. All the material shelters are just tossed out. Everything. You feel like you're just left with nothing. You feel like everywhere you turn in the material world, Judd Bart has criticized it, blown it up, incinerated it. So what are we going to do? Material society is ripped apart. Material family life is ripped apart. Material desires are ripped apart. It is natural that the conditioned soul in this world wants shelter. Judd Bart is not some kind of negativist. He is exposing that in your helpless condition, there's only one real shelter. That is surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not simply saying that in a dogmatic, fanatical way. He's proving it. But the proofs that he is giving, they can be a little terrifying to us because we feel like perhaps the very ground under us is being removed. You've got no material standing. But actually, that's a luxurious feeling. You can remember from the beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Kaviraj Goswami says that Lord Chaitanya is the property of those who are materially exhausted. Definitely, by reading these chapters, the instructions of Judd Bart to Rahugana Maharaj, you'll feel materially exhausted. Where do I turn? And that is a great achievement. We should relish that opportunity. One of the inconceivable characteristics of the conditioned soul in Maya is that it's not only we cannot perceive the full extent of the forest of illusion, we also cannot perceive how helpless we are. We can't fully appreciate how tiny and helpless we are. Because we've surrounded ourselves with so much bad shelter. It's natural for us to want to take shelter. The Bhagavatam is not attacking that. What the Bhagavatam is attacking, and we may sometimes resent a bit, subconsciously, it's attacking the false shelters offered by material existence. This may be difficult for us to see because contemporary life means offering so many artificial and hallucinogenic shelters. That is called progress. You want a succinct definition of human progress from the mundane point of view, it's the proliferation of artificial shelters to make you artificially feel secure and make you artificially feel hope in material existence and the advancement of human material prowess. Stripped of all that, the human being becomes a different creature. I like to explain that there are five basic myths that predominate the consciousness of human beings today. And they call this progress and advancement. What are those five myths? Number one, money brings happiness. Now, even the cutting edge of material social science knows that's not true. Nevertheless, this world is so economically driven that even economics, which is considered in the academic world as the dismal science, is now elevated to the platform of being the life and soul of human existence. Top economists are treated like rock stars, the acharyas, the mahajans, who can give you the complete necessities of life, not only physically, but also psychologically. Economic growth has become the number one focus. That is the first myth, that money brings happiness. Myth number two, technology brings well-being. The more technology, the more prosperous and wholesome your society is, because after all, that's what technology is all about, right? Myth number three, weapons bring security. The more your country spends on weaponry, the more secure the people are. Then, myth number four, the earth provides unlimited resources for you to exploit. You can depend on that. And myth number five, after you exploit the unlimited resources, there is provided by the earth. The earth provides unlimited room for waste disposal. So armed with these five myths, you enthusiastically jump into the forest of material enjoyment, and you're ready for action. We look at the world today, we see that something bewildering has happened amidst all the usual bewilderment. The standard social theory for quite a long time was that any social upheavals are caused by the dispossessed, the poverty-stricken people, who, because they don't have the basic necessities of life, they rise up and overturn governments. Something else has happened in the past 20 years, and social scientists are very shocked by this phenomenon. The uprisings, social disturbances in the world, are caused by the middle class. They are the ones who are shaking everything up. For two reasons. As they become more prosperous and increase their consumer goods, they make more demands. Look at the transportation system around us. Look at the educational system. What's the government doing for us? This is the nature of material desire. The more you get, the more you want. The old theory was that to have a peaceful, prosperous society, you need a good middle class. And they'll make democracy. They want the good things in life, and by being middle class, they'll be peaceful, stable, and they won't bother anybody. It's the low class you got to watch out for. They have nothing, and therefore they can turn everything upside down. Anyone who reads Srimad Bhagavatam, especially these chapters by Judd Bart, can see the holes in the middle class theory. There's no way that by increasing your material desires, you're going to be satiated. Impossible. There's no way that, okay, now I've got this. My material desires are stable. I don't want anything more. No. The nature of illusion is that the more we get, the more we want. There's the endless quest for material security and stability. So there's no such thing as a stable middle class. And many of the countries of the world are showing that. The uprisings are not the low class or dispossessed or poverty-stricken people. The uprisings are caused by the middle class who want more. The second part of this phenomenon is that when economic hard times come and the middle class loses what they've gotten through such hard labor, they become very angry. In the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Krishna uses this phenomenon in his explanation to his dearmost devotees, the gopis, of why he disappeared from them. He points out a social phenomenon. He gives a material example. Someone's poor, and they become well off, well established. And then they lose all their wealth. They never stop thinking about it. This is the case with the middle class and their uprising. When they see that we're falling back, our hard-earned gains are being erased, they become angry. What does Krishna explain in Bhagavad Gita? Contemplating the objects of the senses. Attachment develops, then lust, and from lust must come anger. This basic point is very mysterious for the contemporary world. Lust should lead to lust, and more lust. And then you feel fulfilled. You feel that your life is worthwhile. You have a sense that life is good. My life is progressing nicely. This is the material conception, that the expression of lust is beneficial. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, as soon as there's lust, there must be frustration, anger. There's no way around it. Because you are not the body, you're not the mind, your dedication to material desires must cause problems. So we can see that in the case of the phenomenon we're describing, of the middle class being the ones who are shaking everything up, not the proletariat, as Marx predicted, not the poverty-stricken persons that were thought to be the constant source of trouble. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a completely different picture of human civilization. And it's a completely different picture that we should make sure we appreciate. Let us look at progress. Rather than considering how money is supposed to bring happiness, or technology brings prosperity, or weapons bring security, so on and so forth. The Bhagavatam is teaching us that real human progress begins when you feel tired of changing bodies. That is real human progress. I'm tired of the samsara bija, that seed of material desire that causes me to change one body after another. You start out with that samsara bija, that seed of material existence, and then due to your association with material nature, the seed becomes watered. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Gunasangha, Sadasa, Joni Janmasu. It's not an innocent thing to make your way through life, through material existence. It's not normal, it is not without repercussion, it is not faultless. Just by your making your way through material existence, things happen to you, you're making things happen. The seed, the samsara bija, is being watered just by your making your way through life and trying to have a meaningful life, a life in which you can feel content about. Just by that apparently innocent activity, the seed of material existence becomes watered, and then fruit appears, the fruit of happiness and distress. And by tasting those fruits, you become further bound to material existence and subject to more reactions. So Judd Barrett is going to describe to Rahugana Maharaj that there is nothing wanted about material happiness. It simply captivates you. If you read Bhagavad Gita, what do you see? Krishna is always talking about rise above happiness and distress. Tolerate happiness and distress. Be equipoised amidst happiness and distress. Because the material happiness agitates the mind, produces false expectations, and therefore, it's a disturbance as much as material distress is. So we're, through the eyes of Bhagavatam, looking at material existence in a completely different way. Just think, the definition of human progress. I got it from Srila Prabhupada. Gotta give credit where credit is due, of course. When a human being feels tired of changing bodies, that is real progress. To think about that totally redefines your vision of the individual and society. Our two great criticisms of human society today are, number one, there's no concept of liberation, no concept of freedom from material existence, generally speaking. What to speak of a methodology for becoming completely free from material existence? Our second complaint is that there is no knowledge of what your next body is going to be. It is not considered a relevant subject matter. So based on these two criticisms, we present Srimad Bhagavatam. Someone might say, How is it that just by developing your consciousness, purifying your consciousness, the whole world can become a better place? We look to the supreme example of the topmost devotee, Krishna himself, who came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to show the full potential of bhakti. We cannot imitate, but we're following in the footsteps. When Lord Chaitanya wanted to go to Vrindavan again, his first attempt resulted in his turning back. He took the advice of Sanatana Goswami. You shouldn't go to Vrindavan with thousands of people. You should go alone or with very few other persons. So as you know, Lord Chaitanya returned to Jagannath Puri. It was very important for him to go to Vrindavan. So therefore, one day he took aside in confidence Srup Damodar and Ramananda Roy and explained to them, I would really like to go to Vrindavan, and if you're happy about my going, then I can travel there in happiness. I don't want anyone going with me, and if you see someone trying to follow me, please stop them. This is Mahaprabhu's request to his confidential associates. So as you know, Srup Damodar said, well, indeed, if you say that our happiness is your happiness, please listen to this. We're not going to stop you. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're independent. At the same time, you have said this, that your happiness is our happiness. Let us request that you take two persons with you. In this way, your trip will be properly executed. So Lord Chaitanya agreed. And the night before he departed, he took the blessings of Lord Jagannath. And the next morning, he got up early before everyone woke up and slipped out. The devotees, when they arose, naturally, they're looking for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're searching for him. But Srup Damodar, as the confidential associate of the Lord, dissuaded them. Don't look. It's not necessary to look for Mahaprabhu. And the devotees understood. He's gone. Lord Chaitanya enters the forest of Jarikanda, and there he shows the full potential of the Bhakti Shakti. He shows the full impact that an extraordinary devotee of the Lord can have. You know how the tigers, the rhinoceroses, the boars, the elephants, all these fierce creatures gave way for Mahaprabhu. His foot touched a tiger lying in the path, and then he commanded the tiger, "Chant Hare Krishna." The tiger jumps up, dancing, chanting Hare Krishna. Mahaprabhu is bathing in the river, saying his Gayatri. A herd of wild elephants comes, and Lord Chaitanya sprinkles the elephant herd with water and asks the elephants, chant Hare Krishna. The elephants chant and dance in ecstasy, roaring, rolling on the ground. Balabhadra Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya's assistant, he's watching all this. At first he was afraid, and then he was amazed. The deer gather around Lord Chaitanya as he proceeds through the forest, causing Lord Chaitanya to remember the deer in Vrindavan approaching the son of Maharaj Nanda. The peacocks, the birds, follow him here and there. Just by the consciousness of the topmost bhakta, the whole world changes. The trees, the plants become jubilant, even though they non-moving living entities. This is the effect of maximum Krishna consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya is showing us that, all right, your chanting may not be as powerful to cause such a transformation in the animal kingdom, but at least you can deal with the unfortunate human beings of today. And by inoffensive chanting and lack of material personal motivation, your effect can transform all society. It is not some kind of legend or dream or religious rah-rah talk. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is showing by his practical example the full potential of the bhakta and the effect of bhakti on the world. So, humbly following in those footsteps to our measure, certainly we can carry out the desire of the parampara and seek to transform all of human society and save them from such a pointless, meaningless life. So many shelters are offered in the forest of material enjoyment. So we spoke in the beginning about how it is natural that the human being wants to take shelter. But what happens? Judd Barrett describes, you're feeling overwhelmed by heat. What do? You jump in a river that's shallow and you break all your bones. You're thirsty for water. What do? You race out into the desert chasing a mirage. You're hungry and you want shade. What do? You approach an impious tree that has neither fruits nor flowers. The acharyas point out that by taking improper shelter, as evidenced by someone approaching a fruitless, flowerless tree for food and shelter, by taking that improper shelter, it's not an innocent thing. You get sinful reactions. So again, this concept of I'm just innocently making my way through life, having experience, it doesn't hold up. Another example Judd Barrett gives. I want happy material home life. So I make a nice little home, but what actually does it turn out to be? What does my material home life turn out to be? A forest fire. So verse after verse, Judd Barrett goes on like this. So again, we may wonder, what does he leave us to stand on? Judd Barrett is being true to the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. He intends to leave you only with shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. In this way, he rejects every other possible shelter, whether it's political leaders, whether it's material home life, whether it's material friends, material society. Judd Barrett exposes that all these shelters are the greatest harm. Sometimes we may think that it's an exaggeration to consider the pitfalls of human society as Bhagavatam presents it, as Srila Prabhupada so dynamically presented. But if you indeed make an analysis from the perspective of what is the real point of human life, it becomes obvious why our acharyas spoke in this way. Yadubar Prabhu once told me that he was in Calcutta with Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada called him and some other devotees into the room, and just speaking in a confidential yet open way, said, if you only knew how bad your leaders are in society, if you only knew. So generally we think, well, We've got some bad leaders in the history of the world. Stalin. Stalin himself said, it's very easy to govern people. I don't understand what the problem is. I don't understand why government leaders have such difficulty. Here's what you do. All you do is keep the people to the level of starving, and they do whatever you want. What's the problem in being an executive head? So everyone recognizes. That is the horrible extreme. But then consider, if you have taken responsibility for leadership and you don't know how the universe works, you don't know who you are, you don't know what is the goal of life, how can you actually benefit people? So therefore, Judd Bart, he'll rip you. You have no value. You are like the shallow river inviting people to jump in for shelter, and they break every bone in their body. Now you may say, well, it's not that bad. Leaders, some of the time, want to do good. But you see, the viewpoint of Bhagavatam is that if you want to do good, you must know what is good. If you want to love, if you want to care, then take the trouble to be qualified. Otherwise, you're held accountable by the laws of nature. So generally, we consider that, well, someone wants to love, someone wants to care, good enough. What the world needs now is more love. But without knowledge, without proper understanding, proper technique, how can you effectively love? How can you effectively care? How can you give shelter? So to dramatize that point, sometimes our acharyas, they can upset us. Who are you to think you can help someone? What do you mean? I have a desire to care, to love. I want to be selfless. Who appointed you? How can you say like that? I'm a nice person. I want to be nice to others. Who told you that you are the great helper? Actually, when you think about it, it's quite quite liberating. That's right. Who appointed me? What do I know? That's the point that Judd Bart wants you to accept. What do you know? Who appointed you? It's actually an act of false ego that you want to appoint yourself as the big helper, yet you have no knowledge, you don't understand what is the point of life, you don't understand what is your relationship with Krishna, yet you have presented yourself as the big helper. So, this can be a little unsettling. Furthermore, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would point out that by your offering material shelter, you're distracting people from what is the real goal of life. So you think you're doing good by offering material remedies, but you're actually creating a disturbance because you're clouding the situation and you're distracting people. Offering, again, a shallow river. These explanations are given to shake us, to wake us, so that we actually have a perspective to judge what is real human well-being and real human progress. And in this way, we can actually use this world for the all-around benefit of the human being. But without that overview, without that comprehensive, holistic vision, how can you really care for someone? How can you really help someone? This is Judd Bart's point. And at the end of his instruction, Rahuguna Maharaj is completely grateful. He feels relieved. I offended you. I called you an imbecile and recruited you to carry my palanquin. I can see you have forgiven me. You have bathed me with this transcendental knowledge. Prichard Maharaj was listening to Shukadeva Goswami say this, and in his humility, Prichard Maharaj was thinking, Rahugana Maharaj got relief from his offense to Judd Bart. What about me? I draped a sadhu with a dead snake, and I was cursed. Where's my relief? Rahugana Maharaj got relief. I don't have any relief. So the acharyas point out that Shukadeva Goswami consoled him. Don't you see what's happening right now? Through me, Srimad Bhagavatam is coming to you in the presence of all these sadhus. That means the curse has been nullified. You're humbly thinking there's no relief for you, as Rahugana Maharaj obtained. But just look what's happening right now. The sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam has nullified every aspect of any material difficulty, any material complexity that you had. So let us not be afraid to take the full impact of Srimad Bhagavatam and tactfully explain it. Because without that full impact, human beings have no perspective on what is actually good, what is actually beneficial. We can appreciate temporary material endeavors for help and betterment, but we should never think that such endeavors have actually made a significant contribution to human progress. That is the point. So please remember Srila Prabhupada's definition of human progress. When you start feeling tired of changing bodies, you have made human progress. When you understand what is liberation, when you understand what your next body will be, then you have made human progress and you're capable of giving welfare upliftment for the world. So we thank Judd Bart for his totally destroying any kind of material shelter. He's not a nihilist. He's doing that to prepare you for what is the real shelter. And rather than Rahugana Maharaj becoming upset and angry, Rahugana Maharaj is going to thank him. You have saved my life. You have given me the best. We're ordered to stop class by 8:45. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.